Hey, Anna, you know I like to leave town when it's cloudy skies in Cincinnati, right?
Oh, yeah, I know all about that because I have to field all your phone calls while you're gone.
Well, the weather around here is not necessarily the best, especially in the wintertime. And if there's like a big event happening, like an eclipse or a conjunction, I got to watch the weather and travel to wherever it's clear. I'm called an eclipse chaser, and that's also mean I'm leave everybody else behind.
Yeah. I also like that you are incredibly noncommittal when everybody's asking you where you're going to be going, because you're like, I don't know. It depends what the weather. It's like, seriously?
It totally is. I completely admit I'm a terrible person to be around during an eclipse and something important, because yes, I will cut and run and leave people behind. If there's an eclipse and I can travel to see it, I will go. And my last one was,
and leave people behind. I like that.
And leave people behind. But you're right. It's not that I don't want to tell you where I'm going. It's mm-hmm. that, you know, because I want people to go to. I like a crowd for the stuff. It's not like it's just me and the universe or something. I really don't know. I watch the weather until the last minute. And so I've become kind of this, amateur weather forecaster that I can predict where to go. Of course, I'm using a lot of technology. But the latest one is I went to the Louisville area to see the big conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn, and because it was going to be cloudy in Cincinnati, so I went down to Louisville and got a good view. But what usually happens is when I leave town, it ends up still being clear in Cincinnati.
Oh, so all of that, and you leave, and then it ends up being clear. But you know when that actually is true, because even for the eclipse in 2017, although it was not fully wasn't the full eclipse, I get that. But you, so it's still clear. That's interesting, but you still head out of town. You're like, gotta go.
So I'm notorious for that. Some of our members are even like saying, yeah, go, leave town, because it'll be clear anyway. So I went all the way to Louisville, and it was still clear in Cincinnati. But then I did come back the next day, and it was clear again in Cincinnati. So it's not like I'm a bad luck charm. But,
sure. Tell yourself that.
I'll keep trying. From the various home studios and Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. We're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where socially distant can be measured in galaxies. We're excited to welcome meteorologist and columnist for space.com, Joe Rayo. All right, so we're talking weather today.
Yeah, this is an important job for an astronomer, to know the weather, because, yeah, you got to know if you're going to actually see something. You know, if we're going to stay up till midnight or 2 in the morning, we got to make sure that the skies are clear. And unfortunately, Cincinnati is not necessarily the clearest place in the world to do stargazing.
Well, you know, don't blame the city for that.
No, I joke about this is that, you know, boy, whose really stupid idea was it to put an observatory in Cincinnati where it's cloudy half the time?
The first one, too.
Well, I'm so glad that they made that mistake and put it here in Cincinnati, because it really wasn't a mistake. It was that the city of Cincinnati got together and paid for this, and it's such a cool thing to work with this telescope. Mm-hmm. But it is cloudy
but
half the time.
But you leave it the second you have to.
And I will leave town in a second, in a heartbeat.
I imagine you like a fugitive. You just like throw an old duffel bag in your Prius and just like peel out of town. Like, you're like, we gotta go. Like, yeah. That's what I imagine, because I'm never there or going with you when you're doing this, because I don't have that level of interest. But I do, you know, it's like we gotta peel out. Like, there's like a code word involved. I don't know.
Okay, that only happened once, but it happened once.
You're like, yes, that did happen one time.
There was a lunar eclipse a number of years ago where it was cloudy in Cincinnati, and it was looking like it might clear up, but it didn't.
Uh-oh.
And so I got on the internet, and I was looking at like webcams from around Ohio, and there's this webcam from Dayton where they were showing the moon, clear skies. So during the eclipse, I did throw everything into a car and drive up I-75 And I got there just in time to see it. I ended up watching it from a Chuck E. Cheese parking lot.
Are you serious?
Yes.
A Chuck E. Cheese parking lot.
Super exciting. Super exciting.
Did anybody come out like, sir, you can't just sit in the parking lot? There's children playing in here.
Well, no, I think it was after hours.
It was,
I mean, it was like 11 at night.
Just use the parking lot.
Yeah. So let's see. I've done that one. I've done a Cracker Barrel parking lot too. That one's I've been in one of those before. Nature Preserve in the middle of the night. Sorts of places.
How have you not been murdered?
Sorry. Well, usually I have a telescope there, so I look like the creepiest person. So
that's a good point. Everyone's avoiding you, actually.
Yeah, if any murderers are walking around, they're like, I'm not getting
that
guy
alone.
I don't know what's his deal, but. So this is one of the things I've gotten pretty good at predicting weather in very short amounts of time. Like, I can tell you what the weather is going to be like 8 hours from now, but I'm not going to be very good like days in advance. That's for sure. So, but every time I've had to travel to go to clear skies, it's worked. I've been able to get there. There was another, the infamous Cracker Barrel
incident of whatever it was.
Yeah, this one was, I saw on the forecast, I wanted to drive as little as possible. I wanted to be as close to home as possible. And so I ended up picking Effingham, Illinois, as being the closest place I could drive to that was clear.
That was the closest place?
Yeah, so it's a 4-hour drive. And I get out there and it was still cloudy. So I thought, okay, I guess I better drive some more. And then right when the eclipse started, it cleared up. Right there in Effingham and
in the Cracker Barrel parking lot.
That's all, you know, it's what you got to do.
No, absolutely. You've got to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody can relate to this. You would have to do this.
Yeah. There's, I would definitely choice. Not just watch it on YouTube later. Yeah. For sure. Well, the observatory also, not only is it that we're in a place where they have kind of unpredictable weather, we also play an important role in the history of weather, which I think is huge.
Yeah, our second astronomer, his name is Cleveland Abbey. He was, he inherited the scope and the first observatory, and he just got clouded out so often that he was kind of getting a little sick of it. And so he decided, well, if I'm sitting up here, it's a cloudy day, I better come up with something else to do. And he started watching the weather patterns and how the clouds are moving mostly from the west. Mm-hmm. And he came up with this brilliant idea of connecting through the telegraph lines to other stations around the country. And he basically got on the telegraph and say, hey, what's your weather out there, St. Louis? What's your weather out there, Indiana? And he'd be able to get predictions as to what was going to be coming Cincinnati's way. Now, I mean, it sounds like so obvious to do this, but that was the first time you can really connect with places really quickly. And so he becomes, Cleveland Abbey is his name, he becomes the first modern meteorologist. He publishes his first weather predictions. And now I did find, I got to give a shout out to one of our researchers, Don, who found this. And they found an interview with Cleveland Abbey when he first started. And one of his first weather forecasts is this. It would be clear or storm or whatnot. That was his prediction.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like a modern forecast. Like a modern thing. Like it could rain or not, or snow or not, or whatnot.
Yep. Yeah, so he was always fascinated by this because as a kid he'd heard about his parents like making like prediction, wild weather predictions, like, oh, you know, the corn is this high, so it's going to be this, or the moon, there was something around the moon, so this is going to be. So he wanted to kind of do something a little bit more accurate, but his first love was definitely astronomy. And so when he was a kid, he told his dad that he wanted to be an astronomer. His dad was not pleased. He was quoted as saying, how are you going to earn a living? And he said, drop it. Imagine this is like 1840s. Drop it. But he ended up being an astronomer, coming to Cincinnati, being our second observatory astronomer, and then going on to even more fame as the founder of the National Weather Service. So we had that start right here in Cincinnati.
It's pretty exciting. I do remember when I first started at the observatory and I would look at like another popular weather predicting website and it would be like, psh, you need to use the National Weather Service, like weather.org or whatever it is. Otherwise, weather.gov or whatever. It was like, this is that's where we get our weather around here at the observatory because we started that.
Exactly. This is the home of weather forecasting right here.
That's right.
Well, I'm a big fan of reading space.com, and recently there was a column from Joe Rayo about the 10 must-see sky events of 2021, and I thought this would be really fun to talk about. Joe's a longtime TV meteorologist and also writes for the Farmer's Almanac, and Joe is great. It's so great to have you join us. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you, Dean, and also Anna.
Thank you.
Talking about the, as you just mentioned, the top 10 events of 2021.
Yeah, and I think it's I think you picked some real good ones. I mean, these are the things that that the average backyard stargazer can see. And so what do you have on tap for us? What do you have coming up that you're excited about?
Well, we have, I guess you could call it, those of you who go far enough back or are of a certain age, you may remember a comic strip named Mutt and Jeff. It was a big tall guy and a little short guy. And I guess you could say that this first event is the Mutt and Jeff of the celestial events of 2021. It will bring together the smallest and the largest planets in our solar system, Mercury and Jupiter. The two of them are going to be very close together in the early morning sky, say around a half hour to 45 minutes before sunrise. Go outside, look over toward the eastern part of the sky, and just above the horizon, you'll see two bright stars. One of them will be a bit brighter than the other. The brighter one will be Jupiter. The somewhat dimmer one will be Mercury. And in that, you're looking at, again, the smallest planet, the planet that's closest to the sun, Mercury, and the biggest planet, Jupiter, which got a lot of airplay in December when it had another rendezvous with another planet. And that, of course, was Saturn, the so-called Great Conjunction. Well, this time around, Jupiter's playing footsie with another planet, and this will be, again, Mercury. In the early morning hours, again, about a three-quarters of an hour before sunrise on the 3rd of March.
Something to look forward to. And also, I know we have two eclipses this year. We got the lunar eclipse in May and the solar eclipse in June. Are you looking forward to those? Are you planning on going to see those or one or two of them or both of them, I should say?
Actually, Anna, we have three total eclipses coming up. The first one will be an eclipse of the super moon.
You got to say it that way. That's right.
You know, whenever we have the moon at full phase and when it's at perigee, its closest point to the Earth, it appears a little bit larger and a little bit brighter than normal. And it has become very popular to refer to that as a super moon. Well, we have that in May on the night of May 25th, 26th. And also on that very same night, we're going to have an eclipse of the moon. Now, we're talking about here in the Cincinnati area. Unfortunately, this is going to be a total eclipse, but those in the Queen City will not be able to see the total phase. The eclipse will get underway just before moonset. The moon will begin to enter the shadow of the Earth at 5:45 a.m. on the morning of May 26th. And unfortunately, the moon is going to set before we get to totality. So in Cincinnati, 6:21 a.m. or thereabouts, the moon will be about 40 or 42% covered. And then that's it. The show is over for us because the moon will drop below the western horizon. If you live west of Cincinnati, if you live in the central and western part of the United States, the total phase of the eclipse will occur before the moon sets. And this is interesting. This total eclipse, as total eclipses of the moon go, usually when we have a total lunar eclipse, the period of totality lasts, maybe about an hour or so. This one's going to be rather short. It's only going to last for about 14 or 15 minutes. The moon barely makes it into the shadow of the Earth completely. That's the first eclipse of 2021. Then we have an eclipse of the sun, which is coming our way on June the 10th. And that eclipse as well is going to be interrupted by sunrise in Cincinnati. The eclipse will begin at 4:45 in the morning. Well, wait a minute, you say. 4:45 a.m.? Is the sun up at that hour? No, it's not. But still, the eclipse begins before sunrise. And then we have the peak of the eclipse, the maximum eclipse. And that comes our way at 5:38 a.m. Guess what? The sun is still not up above the horizon. So we have to wait until the sun comes up. And fortunately, it does come up in time for us to see at least a part of this eclipse at 6:12 a.m. in Cincinnati. As the sun rises, you'll see what looks to be like, and you'll have to, of course, use a special filter. Make sure you don't look directly at the sun during a solar eclipse, because you do stand the risk of causing partial or complete blindness if you stare at it long enough. But 6:12 a.m., the sun is going to come up, and there's going to be a big bite taken out of the upper part of the sun. The sun will be about 25% eclipsed. And then from then until the end of the eclipse, 6:33 in the morning. So we only have about a 23 minute view of this eclipse. And again, we're catching the very tail end of it, because most of it is happening before the sun comes above the horizon. And now, if you are interested, you could try and see this a different way, just along the north shore of Lake Superior, sweeping up into central Canada. There's going to be an annular eclipse. And what is an annular eclipse? An annular eclipse is when the moon is, in this case, a little too far away to cover the sun completely. And so when it passes directly in front of the sun, instead of covering it up, there it leaves behind a ring around the dark silhouette of the moon. That's where we get the word annular derived from the Latin term annulus, meaning ring-shaped. It's kind of like taking a penny and putting it on top of a nickel. The penny would be the moon, the nickel would be the sun. And no matter what you do, you're still going to have part of the nickel visible, no matter how much you try to align it up properly. And that's kind of like what's going to happen in the sky. Again, from northern Lake Superior up into this path that runs through central Canada, you'll have, right after sunrise, this ring of fire that the sun will be transformed into. A rather interesting and rather beautiful sight. The problem, of course, is at this moment in time, nobody's allowed to go into Canada because of the COVID situation. I'm not sure if the borders will be open by June the 10th. So if you cannot get a view of the ring phase of the eclipse, at least you'll be able to see locally here in our area a little piece of that eclipse coming up on June the 10th. And then the final eclipse of 2021 will come on November 19th. And that's going to be really interesting. It's going to be an almost total eclipse of the moon at 4:02 a.m. on the morning of November the 19th. From here in our area, that's 4:02 a.m. Eastern time, 97.5% of the moon will be inside of the Earth. It'll be practically a total eclipse. And when the moon is totally or nearly totally eclipsed because of an atmospheric effect, atmospheric refraction taking the light of sunrises and sunsets around the world and directing it up toward the moon will turn an eerie coppery or reddish color. And since there's going to be a small sliver of the moon left over, still triumphantly, still visible, while the rest of the moon is in shadow and in a ruddy color, and then we have this little stripe of yellow for the uneclipsed part of the moon, it's going to resemble in the sky a Japanese lantern. In fact, an old-time photographer from many, many years ago who I knew, his name is Peter Levins, back in the 40s, he referred to this as the Japanese lantern effect. And it should look rather beautiful, rather pretty, to see this moon hanging low in the western sky in the pre-dawn hours of November 19th, almost completely covered by the shadow of the Earth, looking like a reddish or orange colored ball with that little stripe still left over or still lingering outside of the shadow, shining with a yellowish color, again resembling kind of a Japanese lantern in the sky.
Well, I think your picks of the year are right on. I'm looking forward to that November 19th lunar eclipse, because it's also going to be partially, it'll be visible from across the United States. And the like you said, the one in May is going to be best in the West Coast, western half of the U.S. And but yeah, we got the super moon eclipse in May and a puny moon solar eclipse, I guess, because it'll be far away from us during the solar eclipse in June. Well, so Anna and I were talking about the connection of weather and astronomy, and where I'm going to go on the eclipse day depends on the weather forecast. And so I know this is your original background, is that you were a meteorologist for a very long time and then turned astronomer. How did the combo happen for you?
It happened because I wanted to become an astronomer when I was very young, and when I was 10 years old, my grandfather took me to the Hayden Planetarium, which I'm now affiliated to this day. I've been on planetarium staff, in fact, since 1986. But when I was 10 years old, we went to see a sky show, and it was all about a big meteor shower that was going to take place in November of that year, the Leonid meteor shower. And the gentleman who gave the talk, a very robust speaker, in fact, one of my mentors in astronomy, Dr. Fred Hess, told everybody that on this night coming up, it was November 16th, 1966, we have a chance to see a meteor shower where we could see hundreds, yay, thousands of meteors per hour. Well, I came out of that planetarium wired. I was ready. I was all set to see that event. I was so charged up to see that spectacular meteor shower. And the evening of the shower, I made sure to go to bed early because it was going to happen after midnight and into the early hours of the morning. But before I went to bed, I watched all three TV weathermen in New York. There was a gentleman on Channel 2. His name was Harry Geis. Channel 4 had Dr. Frank Field, and Channel 7 had Tex Antoine. And all three of them said the same thing, that it was going to be no worse than partly cloudy for that spectacular meteor shower. I went to bed. I woke up. My grandfather and I, we went outside, we looked up that night, and it was totally and completely cloudy. It was terrible. We didn't see a darn thing that night, because instead of clear and partly cloudy that I was promised by Dr. Frank Field, it was just the opposite. And I started to cry. And I even said to my grandfather, I got out one declarative sentence. I said, "But Dr. Frank Field said it was going to be partly cloudy." And my grandfather looked at me and said, "Joey, I think the partly is over." And it was. But the next day, that was a changing point in my life, Dean and Anna, because the next day I was so angry that I was led astray by these TV weather people that I said, the next time a big event in the sky is happening, I'm going to know if I'm going to see it or not. And I went to my library and I took out books on meteorology. And I started also buying the New York Times. And my only reason for buying the New York Times is they had a big weather page. And on the weather page, they had the official weather maps from the National Weather Service. And I said, I'm going to learn how to forecast on my own. And I, over 3 years, I got the New York Times every day. I had over 1,000 weather maps from the New York Times. I kept them in a boot box. And I would learn how to track weather systems across the country by watching the weather, looking at the weather maps. I even used to put the weather forecast on the blackboard when I used to go to school, first in elementary school and then later on in junior high school. I used to put the forecasts up on the blackboard. And one day, in fact, in 1969, I actually called for a snowstorm. I said there was going to be a snow day on Monday. When all the other forecasters on TV were saying it was going to rain, it turned out it did snow. We did have not just one, but several snow days out of that because it was such a big storm. When I came back, everybody said, "Hey, Rayo, you ought to be a weatherman when you grow up or when you go to college or whatever." And I said, "Yeah, I think that's should be my advocation." So I went to college. I got the degree in atmospheric science. I ended up first doing weather forecasts on the radio. And then later in 1995, I moved on to do television full time for a New York City outlet known as News 12, got to be well known in New York. And still, while I'm not on television anymore, I have a Facebook page. Any of you can go online and look at it, Joe Ray of Weather on Facebook, where I often post forecasts and stuff about astronomy and meteorology there. So it's been great. I've been able to take two of the things which I love the most, weather and astronomy, and mix them together. And that pretty much is my life as it has progressed to this particular moment in time. I've been doing this now for over 40 years, and I'm going to just keep on doing it until time comes when I can't do it anymore.
Well, this has been great, Joe. You've definitely found your calling and got us all excited about weather and astronomy today. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Nice to be with you. And anytime you want to talk weather or astronomy or turkey or anything, hey, just give me a ring. I'll be happy to be here for you.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we've been speaking with Joe Rayo, who writes for Space.com, Farmer's Almanac, and many other places. Former TV meteorologist. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks again, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we have kid questions, and we have adult questions. We're talking weather today, and because I am a snow lover, and I'm not getting much of the snow here in Cincinnati, I'm going to go ahead and ask, I'm broadening my horizons literally by asking if other planets have snow. And if so, can I go there? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I don't want to go there, but I want to know if other planets get snow because I just want to know what my options are.
Now, this is also coming from Anna, the person that if there's 1 inch of a snow on the ground, cannot drive anywhere. She's paralyzed, yeah. A half inch of dusting.
I made it very clear when I first started the observatory. It's a useful little rhyme. Snow's on the ground, I won't be around. This happens, like, again, I stand by this, like, maybe 3 days out of the year. Let me have this. I still work. I just don't come in. I get under a blanket. Then I just, up to my waist, I have my laptop, I do my work, I look out the window, and I sip cocoa. Why can't I let you chase eclipses wherever? Why can't you let me have this?
I love it. I'm not immune to that, too. I'm not above it. I've used as an excuse before, too. Like, oh my gosh, it's too slick out there. I can't even go outside. I'll have to reschedule.
And you live on the steepest hill. I grew up in the country on a very steep hill. You live on the steepest hill, and yeah. The fact that you let that Prius just skate down that, I'm just like, look, buddy,
it
I don't
want to
be
optimal.
The reason that you careen into some kind of like, no, I'm good, just stay
it
home.
Is the optimal Cincinnati excuse. Now, I'm from Columbus, which is not necessarily any tougher than it is in Cincinnati, but we wouldn't let an inch of snow stop us. But they didn't have any hills in Columbus either. So anyway, that's an aside point. You asked the question. That was, is there snow on other planets? And the one that comes to mind is Mars. So Mars has snow, kind of.
Oh.
It's because, Venus doesn't, Mercury doesn't, the moons in the solar system don't. So Mars is really the only candidate. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly as straightforward as it seems because there's snow on the ground, there's ice on the ground, but what I've figured out or what I've been learning is that we don't even know where it comes from. Like,
oh, that's snow, creepy.
Snow builds up on the ground. It's like,
if a rover,
oh, it's very cold there. Okay. So at nighttime Mars can get down to 180 below zero.
Oh.
And daytime temperatures are usually below zero for the most part, but there's not clouds in the atmosphere. It doesn't rain. So it's basically like they're on Mars and they could just see snow builds up. But they're still debating, the scientists are debating where it actually comes from. Does it fall from the sky or does it just appear? Like, does it just appear out of the atmosphere? Does the atmospheric conditions on the ground, it just builds up? And they don't know the answer to this yet, even though they have rovers and stuff there that they could see if it's falling, but they have not actually seen falling snow.
Okay.
But
it just appears?
It just appears on top of stuff, like condensation, that kind of stuff. It just like kind of forms because it's so cold there that it could just appear.
No, thank you.
Now, one of the landers that did land in around the North Pole, the Phoenix lander, I believe the name of it was, it had solar panels on it. And it got buried in snow, basically. In the Martian winter, it got buried. And
really?
So those panels just snapped off. So the next time that they flew around, they could see the remains of the lander. but the snow built up so much on top of it that, yeah, it crushed the spacecraft essentially. But again, I think it's just so fun that, yeah, they don't even know where the snow comes from. It's like the big debate. Does it fall from the sky or does it just accumulate like dew? It's mostly saying they think it's the latter. They think it's like kind of just accumulates out of the atmosphere just right there on the ground.
Oh, okay. So, I'm more of a top-down approach when it comes to snow. I like to see it fall like, you know, God's confetti or what have you.
Yeah. Well, then
I just threw that up. I don't know what that is.
How poetic.
It's kind of poetic, right?
Well, then I've got another place for you then where stuff falls.
Okay.
Now, if we go to the planets Jupiter and Saturn, these are not solid objects. There's no rocky surface to it. So it's all gases. So they're all atmosphere. But
so no sled
atmosphere, in the atmosphere of Jupiter and Saturn, it's theorized that diamonds exist. That diamonds are just floating around in the upper atmospheres, and that at certain times they can actually fall through the atmosphere. So imagine you're floating through the atmosphere of Jupiter and Saturn. You get out your big net and just collect some diamonds as you're flying around.
Okay. Now we're
talking.
You
up for that one? Now we're talking?
Now we're talking. let me get my net. Get some diamonds. Make myself a little bracelet, little necklace, a little blinging. That sounds great. I love it.
Perfect. Yeah. And then we can not go to work that day.
Exactly. I'd be like, I'm sorry, there's diamonds in the forecast.
Sorry.
Also, an amendment to the previous, you know, snows on the ground won't be around provision.
Diamonds in the sky. We'll figure out something that rhymes with
diamonds in the sky. I'm saying bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There it is. There it
is. Yes. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Joe Rayo from space.com for joining us. You'll find the link to his column on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find us there. If that happens to be Apple Podcasts, your rating and comments will help others find us too. So thanks for helping us out. And if you like what you hear, spread the word.
We'd love to hear your ideas for guests or topics. Find us on Facebook or Twitter or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.